International Women's Day is marked in countries around the world on March the 8th each year, a chance to celebrate improvements in women's rights and the achievements of those who have battled against discrimination of all kinds. But it's also a time to reflect on new concerns, in particular the feminization of poverty, a complex phenomenon linked to persistent discrimination against women in areas of education, healthcare, decision-making or community life. In India, for example, a new report shows that in poor rural parts of the country, less than half of all women have even heard of the AIDS epidemic, making them especially vulnerable to HIV infection. India has the highest number of AIDS cases per country in the world, and with illiteracy rates for women around 50%, there are real fears for an explosion of the disease unless more work is done on education and prevention.
I think it's very important to continue to promote voluntary testing and counseling. I think people have to be motivated to be tested for HIV. And as they're motivated, and if they're counseled properly, then you also have the chance to educate them about the ways to prevent the spread of the virus if they're not infected, and also about the ways to get help and prevent spreading to someone else if they are infected.
Father Bob Vitillo is Special Advisor on HIV/AIDS to the Global Confederation of Catholic Aid and Development Agencies, Caritas Internationalis. He told me that while some Indian government officials are keen to promote enforced HIV testing, the Church is focusing more on voluntary tests, education and counselling to combat the spread of this pandemic.
Most of the psychology experts tell us that you really don't motivate people to change behaviour by forcing them to do something. And, you know, there are plenty of old studies with mice and rats and even with people that show that forced behaviour doesn't work in changing behaviour and making more positive behaviours. So I think that's very true also for HIV testing. And I do think it's an abuse of human rights to force testing on people or to have a whole population tested or even to identify certain groups and say these groups are more likely to be infected, so they should be tested and not others. One of the issues that's coming up in the public health field today is that they're talking about routine opt-out testing, and they're saying that's not forced testing, but doctors, instead of having to go through the trouble of convincing people to be tested or counseling them, doctors could just let people know that everybody's going to be tested when they go in for a physical. And if they don't want to be, then they should tell us. And I have to say, I think there's some strong ethical implications in that as well. There's a real power relationship between doctor and patient. So many patients are afraid to say, I don't want to be tested, if the doctor says we test everyone, for one thing. And again, to miss that important element of counseling people, I think is a big mistake that that some of the medical professionals are promoting today.
This is an issue that we're talking about regarding India. Now, of course, India is one of the key areas, isn't it, expected to rise to perhaps even some of the levels of sub-Saharan African AIDS infections and cases.
Yes, well, what I was just talking about, the routine opt-out testing, is something that's being promoted pretty much generally now in most parts of the world. And in fact, the World Health Organization is now putting out some guidelines that they're asking for comments on. So that will be a more global approach to things. On India, yes, it is an area that we have great fear about. Right now, there are about 5 million people living with HIV, as far as we know it. It's the largest country in the world next to South Africa in terms of number of people living with HIV in one country. Of course, India is a very big country. It's really a subcontinent. But also, there have been some strong movements in India to demand testing of people before they're married. And here, too, I don't think the approach should be that you force people into that. In the United States, two states had that kind of policy. And what happened was that the number of marriages in those states went down very quickly, and the number of marriages in the neighboring states went up very quickly. So people just found ways around that. Plus, to insist that people be tested before marriage and then say, we're not going to allow you to be married, doesn't stop them from having sexual contact or even from living together. So I don't think that's the best approach. Some bishops conferences, especially the bishops of Burundi, have put in a policy to raise the issue of HIV with all candidates for marriage and to ask them to go and get a voluntary test and to share the results with each other. Not a matter of bringing it to the priest or the priest deciding he's not going to officiate at your wedding based on an HIV test result, but really to strongly encourage people to think about this issue in their lives, in their intimate relationships, as they prepare for marriage, and then to be sure that they share those results with each other. I think that's probably a much more balanced approach than to force people to be tested before they're married.
Above all, encouraging a relationship of trust, in other words.
A relationship of trust and more openness and getting people, as they're preparing for marriage, to discuss sexual issues. Sometimes they don't do that, even though they're preparing for a life of a sexual relationship, among other aspects of their relationship.
The question about also government leaders and whether it's appropriate for them to be having mandatory testing or not is something we hear about quite a lot. We've seen it recently in South Africa, this question of whether presidents, prime ministers and so on should be tested to give an example to others, in other words, not to be afraid of this.
Yes, I think that there's an important value of some leaders standing up and saying, OK, I'm willing to be tested. And especially if you have some government leaders who are living with the virus, to talk about it and show that they could both live with the virus and still be leaders and still be integrated into the community. There's a very famous judge in South Africa, Edwin Cameron, who's been he's a Supreme Court judge and been very, very open about his living with the virus. And I think it's brought some hope to people with AIDS, and it's also, I hope, discouraged stigmatization of people with AIDS. So I think there's a witness value of that. But I do think we should always respect people's individual dignity and their choice in terms of privacy issues. Sometimes activists in the field feel like everybody should be tested and be open about the results. And some people want to deal with those things in a private way and with their trusted confidants. And I think we have to respect that, but also see the witness value of some leaders in the community talking about their situation.
This is an issue for the church as well, isn't it, regarding those applying, for example, to seminaries and so on?
Well, there are some, I understand that there are some dioceses and religious orders that, again, may ask candidates to think about HIV and also to consider having a test. Again, that's something that's up to the individual religious superiors and the bishops. But I think more importantly, we should be sure that we speak about HIV issues as we're forming seminarians and religious, not only for consideration of their own past histories, but also to prepare them to be very pastoral and sensitive in their approach to others.
These are all very difficult and very sensitive issues in a way. It's almost as though the scientific community, if you like, is looking for some kind of quick fix to this pandemic.
I think the scientific and the public health community and civil society in general has always been looking for a quick fix. And if we learned anything during these past 25 years, we should see that this is a very complex virus. It changes even in individuals, let alone in being spread to many members of the human family. It's a very complex pandemic. It's not just a medical problem. It's very much related to social conditions, to injustices, to economic and gender imbalances. And so there is no quick fix. I think we have to find many different approaches to try to reduce the number of infections, the new infections, to address the needs of those already infected, and then to continue our scientific research in the hope that someday we'll be able to find a vaccine or a cure for this problem.
In the public perception, it's often seen that despite all the work that you do, that Caritas and that other church organisations all around the world do, it's often seen that the church has somehow kept its distance. It hasn't been engaged enough in what is one of the most pressing challenges, remains a pressing challenge even after these 25 years.
Yes, I think this is a very false image of the church. And I still meet government officials and United Nations officials who are shocked when I tell them about the range of church services in response. And also, I find that many of them are under very false impressions and thinking that leaders of our church or other churches have condemned people with HIV and AIDS. There have been a few small voices among some people, mostly non-Catholic religious leaders, who have talked about AIDS being God's punishment. But most of the faith-based communities don't say that and have really promoted compassionate, non-judgmental response. And yet, I think you're right. The officials, both in the sciences and the healthcare professions and even in government and civil society in general, get the impression, especially from some media sources, that the church is just blocking work on HIV and AIDS. I just recently completed a best practice study of the church's response to AIDS in Southern Africa. It was published on World AIDS Day by UNAIDS, the United Nations Coordinating Agency on AIDS Work Throughout the World. And, you know, I felt very privileged to interview people responding to the AIDS pandemic in Southern Africa, religious sisters especially, but also priests and lay people, and especially people living with AIDS whose lives have been prolonged, and then they get involved in working in these church-based programs on AIDS. It's a wonderful witness, and yet the story isn't told enough, so I felt grateful to be able to tell this story. One quick vignette. I found in my work a young child, 9 years old, Bongani, in the Diocese of Rustenburg, the diocese that's headed by Bishop Kevin Dowling, who's been a real prophet in this area. And this child was dying. They didn't give him more than a few weeks to live, and suddenly we were able to get him antiretroviral medications. And his parents were also very seriously ill. All three of them are now on the medications. He's back in school, the young child, and he serves as the monitor for his parents to make sure that they're taking their medications every day.
So a great story of hope.
Exactly. And it's only because of the churches reaching out. These people live in a poor community, rural, no access to health care. And it's only the church that goes out into these slums and poor communities and makes sure that they can set up the clinics and the dispensaries and then set up the community volunteer programming to monitor people on their medications and to get them the medications.
And my thanks there to Father Bob Vitillo, Special Advisor on HIV/AIDS to the Global Confederation of Catholic Aid and Development Agencies, Caritas Internationalis.